This is Committee of the Whole meeting, October 15th, 2012.
We're going to call Committee of the Whole in order at 7:13. Roll call.
Trustee Clemens?
Present.
Trustee Newby?
Present.
Trustee Sandoval?
Here.
Trustee Savincelli?
Present.
Trustee Trippin?
Present.
Trustee Wyszynski?
Present.
And 2.1 is motion to approve the minutes of the Committee of the Whole meeting of October 1st, 2012.
So moved.
The trip sounds like my duty. Questions, comments, corrections?
I just have one moving through them. One that the item 7 there, the time is 7:54 and yet the community of old name term is 7:38.
What's
that?
Motion to adjourn 7:54, but it shall have to adjourn at 7:38. Let me know which one is correct.
I might have left the recorder on, not shut it off right away, but I'll definitely look at my notes, but I usually write it on here with the clock. But yeah, I'll check that out. Thank you.
So how does that work if it is correct?
Can we hold it over to next meeting?
Yes, we could ask for motion to table until the next meeting.
I'll make a motion to table this until the next meeting.
Okay, motion by Trippin, second by Newby to table approval until the next meeting.
Is this 19 minutes in the meeting?
Yeah, the recorder time doesn't sync with the clock time. It's just the call on the tape is running, so it's 19 minutes, 54 seconds in the meeting.
Oh, that's meeting.
That doesn't, yeah, that's the time on the tape of that item.
Okay.
It's got to sync to.
I just put it on there actually as to help if you're listening to tape and it's on the website, you can go to that part, that number. That's why I do number this.
Okay.
The time there for the different areas.
So can we amend or remove the table?
Right, there hasn't been a vote on the motion to table yet, so Mayor, that motion, if desired, could be withdrawn by the movement.
I would withdraw.
Okay. Motion to table is withdrawn. We're back to the original motion by Trippin, second by Newby to approve after we have a clarification on the timestamp. Any additional questions, comments? Roll call.
Trustee Wyszynski?
Aye.
Trustee Trippin?
Aye.
Trustee Savincelli?
Aye.
Trustee Sandoval?
Aye.
Trustee Newby?
Aye.
Trustee Clemens?
Abstain.
Carried. 2.2 is motion to approve the minutes of the special committee meeting of the whole September 29th, 2012.
So moved. Second.
Trippin and second by myself. Questions or comments? Roll call.
Trustee Dubey?
Aye.
Trustee Sandoval?
Aye.
Trustee Savincelli?
Aye.
Trustee Trippin?
Aye.
Trustee Wyszynski?
Aye.
Trustee Clemens?
Aye.
Okay, first item is under human resources and finance, and just made a tax levy.
All right. Dave, you want to take this one?
Sure.
Okay. From these, we estimate a tax levy is required by the statute to be built to approve it for the final tax levy. I would prefer that we have to return to the the draft or chart after attached to the resolution. Just sort of a rehash of how the estimated tax levy works. Just go over some of the numbers. You're looking at that, and that's the 2011 extension there, and then the 2012 estimated levy. The estimated levy is always grossed up to try to catch as much revenue as possible. And you see the third column there is 2012 adjusted levy. That would be the levy based on the 3% consumer prices index, any new construction benefit. That would be the maximum levy you could utilize. You know, the estimated levy would be an increase of 5.5% over last year's extension. However, the maximum percent really is around 3.5, which includes 3% consumer price index plus the new construction benefit. I also thought EAD would decrease again. I mean, the Avon Township, it went down another 12% for the cars we received. What that does is it impacts your tax rate versus the dollars you see. So when you look at the estimated tax rate, the EADs, it drives those rates. And eventually you start hitting or coming close to your limiting rates, like the general fund, that has a limiting rate of 0.4275. We get really close to that because the EAD has decreased. I just want to also point out over the last number of years, the police pension fund has had an additional $155,000 more in pre-tax revenues, whereas the general fund in the last 3 years has gone down about $193,000. I'm going through the memo, it's the same as last year. It gives you historical information on the consumer price index, the EAD, construction amounts, what percent the dollar extension is. Portion of it is from the consumer price index versus new growth and our tax levy assumptions. Again, I think the graphs we're really going to look at are on page 4 and 5, the pension increases. That's 2003, that's about 150%. Remember, every time the pension fund increases, it takes dollars away from the general fund for general services. And then we have some other impact on the financial forecast. Next year's financial forecast, I included a 3% consumer price index increase. Right now, the way it is that I said, go as a finance director, so let's propose 3%. That's pretty close to what I'm estimating next year in the financial forecast. We've got a maximum levy of new construction would be $3.5 million. That includes new growth and the consumer price index of 3%. Remember, too, that when we do the estimated levy, the road and bridge levy, or the piece of it, the township levy is still road and bridge. So if we can get a levy of $160,000, last year about $53,000 or $55,000 came off that for their share. So we could only levy at 109. So that's why you also want to gross up your estimated levy to capture as much dollars as possible in adjustment later. Open for questions. Again, you know, we're trying to capture as much as possible. I know, you know, property taxes, 50% of our general fund revenues are property taxes. I can't sit here and say we're quite that diversified. We rate that more general sales tax revenues come in. But right now we are relying on property tax revenues in a way where the 18,000 population affecting community. And it's used, you know, general services, streets, etc.
My position is a little different. My concern is the fact that the EAB has gone down 12% after going down 11.4% the year before and 10% the year before that. So from that standpoint, you know, what I see is our tax base is shrinking. And I don't I don't personally agree with the motion of raising taxes on a shrinking base. So from my standpoint, my recommendation would be to keep the continue the 2011 extension, extend the same amount, which, you know, if you look on page 5 there, we've had impacts of no tax levy or rate or extension increase. The impact would be, you know, roughly $123,000, which I think we can handle.
That's what we thought.
That's what we thought.
I mean, the new property of this 122 is about 18,000, I forgot.
Okay.
So I guess that's more of a distinction that we still need to clarify, though, too. Yeah, we talked about this before. New property addition, an addition to the levy for new property does not increase the existing tax rate or tax amount on current property owners. If you don't increase the levy by at least that much, what you're in effect doing, and this is really generalized, is reducing the property taxes that would then be levied on everybody else. Because you've increased the EAD for that new property that is allowed to go in your tax base at the current year's rate. So, you know, you should increase it, the levy, to at least catch that new property amount. So as you go forward, you have more flexibility in the, you know, beyond next year to capture increases as you may need. But if you don't increase the assessment for at least that $18,000 on new property, you're going to lose that potential compounding effect down the road. But again, it doesn't impact your existing tax base as it is. So these are all new homes that are added to the EAB. They're coming in right at the baseline for the zero. So if you should seriously consider allowing, you know, at a minimum, that $18,000 tax increase so you can, because that's no impact on any existing taxpayer if the goal is to not raise the property tax rate for existing taxpayers.
We reduced it effectively 266,000 last year.
So again, you want to do zero.
So this is not decreasing it, it's holding it flat. You know, and I'd be willing to consider the EAB 18,000. So it'd be the $18,000 increase, which would, I don't know if the trend would be less pretty small.
I think that would go up there.
And it's only affecting you. Yeah. So effectively freezing it for existing tax.
Half a percent.
Half a percent.
Okay. 0% levy. Not doing the negative 2 y. What is this? 2 something? Yeah, what we took off.
Right.
You're not going to add that in again. You're not going to take off another. And you feel...
You can't. That's not going
to
be able to add that.
No, but you're not going to add that in again this year. You
just try to reduce it again? No.
Not reduce it, just do it.
Yeah, just do it.
Okay. And you felt comfortable, and you feel comfortable with the way the budget's been going since?
I think so. I mean, from what I can see, we're in pretty good shape. We've taken advantage of some savings.
Just remember that the levy this year is for impacts 13-14.
Yes.
We are on a cash basis. So right now, we have a general fund. It's showing $19,000 in financial forecasts of surplus.
Right.
By saying that if you buy out again, we wipe that out. For 13-14.
Yes.
Not for this year.
Yeah, this year we're spending the money now. Okay. Levy is actually in.
Right.
Okay. second, okay.
I'm very comfortable with that, actually. I think we've been keeping spending at a very reasonable rate, and we've been very watchful of that. And that's been showing and proving that that we're fiscally responsible. So I think we need to capture the $18,000 only, which is fair for the rest of the homeowners, I think, too, that everyone puts in their piece. But no more, because I just don't think that the residents can do this. Not when Lake County's what, like number 14 on the list of highest taxed bodies. We're paying an awful lot of your school levies that are going up and so many other things, so.
Well, you know, it's not the, and, you know, they say no good deed goes unpunished. But staff might be feeling like they've done such a good job saving the new era, and they can save some more. But, you know, I agree. I think we need to be as fiscally responsible as we can. I think we have done a good job, and I think we're doing a good job. The staff has done a really good job in looking for ways to keep our costs down. And I think we can continue to do that. I think there's still some opportunities for us to do that in the future. So, I don't know.
I agree with that, Justin Collins. The blue and flat lines and just capture these new ones.
It means we all have to work harder, but that's our job.
Yes.
And you guys are there because you're doing a great job. So we thank you for being on board.
Thank
you. And we hope you continue to be on board with this.
We might not be a board.
That certainly says that.
Yeah.
Well,
we're here all right together.
There are some
pots that have been damaged, and we'll pass around some photos, and extend the life of the existing building. We should clean the power for later side benefit of improving the appearance, showing our constituents about the infrastructure, also from the appearance standpoint. If that was the only matter, I would not be bringing this item forward. You'll see the last couple of photos with some damage. We need to do some spot painting, but I do feel that the pressure washing is needed first to remove any incipient damage so we can deal with that also at the same time. The proposal sought was for each tower, and therefore the table, has separate costs. I am recommending two different, very reputable companies. One is Queen Panther Tower with the conventional man lift, i.e. one or two people go up in a lift. The Wilson Tower, to be claimed by a different technology, that's proven technology, and it's a growing technology of a of the structure there that's secured at the top.
We call it the lattic, right? Is that what you're
looking at? Yes, and it's controlled by a person with a joystick at ground level. Same type of chemical pre-treatment, pressure washing with a soap solution, and then a what's called a mildew side to regard green growth of the mold and the mildew. We would come right behind those two different contractors to do the spot painting.
Do you have any hands or any questions?
Yes. Ron, given the fact that the cost from both for the Wilson Tower is the same, what's the reasoning for recommending awarding the contract to two different vendors?
Two different technologies. For one, and the other, the giant that would do the man lift would actually have to pay a premium for a larger lift. The Wilson Tower is higher by a few feet. And so when I talked to both of those companies separately, Giant actually was in the lead, only having to do the Panther Tower, but they would not have to pay a premium for the larger lift. So there was no objection. The third consideration, this company with the robotic system out of Logan, Wisconsin, having done considerable work in northern Illinois. And again, very reputable results. They have other techniques, and it's including inspection of the interior by diving rather than having to take the tank down. That's not in the bid. That would be a separate consideration. And so I would like to get a first-hand appreciation of the workmanship and expertise that that company has to offer, or at least has stated to $1,200 cheaper than Warren or Cooney, that's it.
For a panther tower.
For a panther, right. Yeah, that's my question, was why wouldn't we just go with Giant for both, since the price was the same for Wilson, but
non-price consideration.
Is everybody comfortable with staff recommendation?
Yeah.
Moving forward then.
Thank you.
Okay, special events, we've got the holiday tree lighting outline passed out. Everybody would follow up and see if you have any concerns or additional things to be added or covered.
Okay, because Greg was addressing this just a couple of years
ago. Sure. I think so.
And how many do you have? And did we only use yours or did we have other plans?
Well, I didn't have any. I didn't provide a last year.
We used public works.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And will we okay? And do we need Greg's or no?
I think we do, yeah.
Okay.
How many do we need?
25. What do you have?
Two more?
You have none?
I had the torpedo gear.
Because I think my son had to go purchase one, but I just don't have one.
No.
Well, let me look first before you don't purchase anything.
No, bring yourself.
I don't want you to buy them and then just use them for that event. So, all right, I will look into that.
And Vicki? We don't have candy canes on the list, so I'll do the candy canes to give you an idea how many we need.
I have no idea.
Everyone forget the one.
Can you tell a little boy that you're going to teach him?
All right, Sally would have it also, yeah.
Okay. So, we have a choice.
Do we have any
idea
how many kids come through?
We went through 100 toys last year.
Okay, so 200 candy canes and we're good.
Go ahead.
Okay. So, few of the adults enjoy candy canes.
Henceforth, it's 200 adults.
Vicki, you said you were going to get cookies from Cookie.
You said different.
So, can you define a specific cookie or no?
Whatever.
Okay, I'm going to participate in
research. Yeah,
okay. I will put some cookies on.
I bet you can get any can she wants.
That's my favorite. That's what we get.
All right, thank you guys.
Once again, proving that we're all about food.
Check with open up to see if their tent would be available again this year as well.
I'm sorry, did you say you were going to do this?
Yes. Administration subdivision code revisions.
We've been working on updating subdivision code for a couple of years now. Basically to try and revise the process and make the process more to what we can legally do today, as well as make it match what actually is being implemented. Subdivision code is also a process for where we've been looking at different things that are done by the ARC and things of that nature, removing those stuff to agencies also as part of the revision. In the agenda item summary provided you with the findings and recommendations of the planning commission, but also attached to that were the recommended, the actual changes that are being recommended by the planning commission for going through for the revisions to the subdivision ordinance. As the planning commission met, they went through the entire code, and these are all the recommendations for the changes. I'll touch on some of the ones that are, you know, some of the major revisions, and then I can obviously address any questions that you have about anything else. Some of the major issues there that I think we talked about was, you know, the updating timing of the planning commission approval. That's like 90 days, and then board approval, or then the subsequent planning commission is 60 days after that. It's just for the general approval of the subdivision. That does not include the fact that it can't go longer if needed as questions are addressed, but those are the general guidelines that were updated in the ordinance. We tried to modernize the ordinance a little bit by requiring the developers to give us more of the technical information that we can utilize, you know, to update our IT network, GPS information, GIS information, electronic drawings, anything along those lines that we shouldn't get, we added into the subdivision ordinance. So trying to bring our record keeping more to the modern era, electronic data. A couple of minor things we matched up with Lake Dot and the IDOT. Those specifications ours were different than that. We did revise all of the engineering drawings, the standards that are in the subdivision code are standards that we've been implementing for years, and frankly, they didn't match up with our previous one. We tried to remove some of the subjectivity in the code. In the past, the building was allowed by the code to, you know, or as approved, or as approved, or as approved. Well, that makes sense always, but now it's more the exception versus the rule, which kind of was that. So there was a lot more subjectivity. We try to remove that, but yet allow the process to still, you know, govern how things are done. If there's a standard, there's a need for a change, then it has to go through a process to identify why it's going to change to what somebody's requesting. But the engineering standards, again, are standards that we've been utilizing for some years now. The mayor pointed out the modifications on the language of some of the survey monuments and market data. One important aspect that we also updated in the code was we looked at the impacts and the impact fees. The previous subdivision code had a standard number for, you know, determining property values. We got rid of that number to allow for changes in property values. So if you get an appraisal for your property, essentially, that is one method that can be used as the basis for determining, you know, any impacts. And then subsequent years, there's a formula in there for addressing it as time goes on. As we found in, you know, a specific number, you know, that number can vary, as we all know now, on property values, so it didn't seem to make much sense to keep that in there. We did compare the impact fees that are currently in the ordinance, impacts and student impacts of the schools and the acreage required to some other communities as we went through the process, including Naperville and Lake County and then UDO, their development ordinance, to ensure that we were using more applicable numbers to today's standards. We almost match, I mean, we do match Lake County except for two or three of the impacts, and ours are all higher, I believe, in every case. We have a greater requirement for land values what size of school sites, and like I said, we match the total number of students generated depending on the type of residential development, except for, like I said, two or three, but ours are higher in all cases than what Lake County is. But they're only really, really small numbers, you know, that the students generate. So that chart is also in the ordinance that's before you being proposed right now, too. One other thing of note, we had to delete the library fire district capital improvement fees. That's not permitted for non-homeowner communities such as ourselves. And the other thing I wanted to point out was bear with me, I'm sure. Oh, two things. One was that we're requiring the LED lights in order to be more, you know, to conserve energy, make more of a dark sky, but it's just generally for energy conservation purposes. And hopefully they last longer. But the other issue, I didn't go find it, but I know what's in there, was, we're also now requiring annual plans from the developers for all of the stormwater facilities. We've seen over the years, we've had, you know, issues with what's really going in there and how things are supposed to be constructed as far as some of the developments, stormwater retention facilities. So that was also updated based on our experience, and you all know too, that we've seen with those. So that's really, you know, 10,000 foot, all the major changes and revisions to the subdivision code. So, again, the Planning Commission did spend a lot of time going through it and talking about all the changes. We read it from start to finish, and they're recommending approving this document at this time. So, with that, I'd like to be happy to answer any questions.
Mark, you said that LED meters. Now, you said yes to the conservation, but are we concerned that the safety issue with it being slightly darker by going to LED versus solar?
No, we, and we still have to meet any requirements or specifications. What the LED does, instead of throwing light everywhere, it just shoots it up and it shoots it back down to the ground. So you don't have as much disbursement all over the place, but generally in the ground area, the amount of light that they put off is the same as the ground level. Now, you're also, you can change if there's a specific area that's identified where you might want to light an alley from the street or something, shine further back, you can put reflectors on them too to focus some of the light into those areas. And you can also change the wattage. So the general thought was, you know, the smoke will last longer. You can make changes for different areas as required to get your lumens on the ground as well as directing the light where you need to. And the cost, you know, electric cost associated with it.
Which ones need to have reflectors around, because, you know, dark alleys, people do walk around quite a bit in the community here, so.
Yeah, and there's general light standards that are in there, but any determination would be by staff, planning commission, any planners looking at it, anybody, you know, looking at it. There's nothing specific that says, you know, shine here or shine there, but all the staff is involved in the review of everything, as well as yourselves and the planning commission too. So any of those concerns that, you know, well, it should be identified and raised as part of the process. But not knowing each specific circumstance, you know, we did talk about generalities, but each specific circumstance we have to address on a case-by-case basis.
Another thing I want to Now, it is something that, you know, somebody raises a concern. Yeah, you know, it's really dark from there. I'd really like to see the small lights. I don't get to walk in there. Do we have to wait until it goes to the board meeting for that to make those changes? Or is it something that they're going to be able to, staff will be able to address right away to do that type of cost?
Well, that wouldn't, yeah. See, this, remember too, this is for planning purposes for subdivision. There wouldn't be anybody there at that time.
But we're also talking about phasing out some of the other ones, right?
No.
Oh, did I read your part?
Yeah, I guess, yeah. This is just intended for any new subdivisions that is going to be developed. So we're not recommending any changes at this time to all... That's just too costly. We looked at that, and that was so cost prohibitive, the amount of dollars would be to even change that out. Onesie, twosie, you could do it, but the controllers need to be... There's a lot of work associated with it. We didn't... that may change, but when we did this a couple of years ago, we looked at going to LED lighting, and it just wasn't cost effective, you know, and we didn't know the long-term maintenance history, really. They say they're going to last longer, but we haven't seen that history being established for street lighting yet, so.
Do we still have the three sample LEDs out here? Those were spot on.
I don't think, yes.
Two or three years ago, we had three samples of different style luminaires that we put on the poles out here so the board could get an idea. We had also applied and looked for grant applications that we could apply to, and I think we had one or two that we felt in the Green Initiative application that we tried for and were not successful. And like Mark said, the overall cost had time to be prohibited to implement a plan without getting that 85-90% paid for by an outside source. So again, proposed new development and then looking at redevelopment or infill stuff, that's a separate subject to discuss. So your input on that is important.
Future residents or commonly to locate a new development within the community. I'm looking at it from a people standpoint.
This is for planning purposes for even the downtown right here behind us, the vacant property. 120 Fairfield, that development wherever to any new development essentially would be, space. Not that it wouldn't be used, it would be used if there was a major subdivision where numerous properties were consolidated and then wanted to be redeveloped. But it's not intended for this lot, this lot, this lot type thing. Because most of those lots already have the lighting in front of it, that's not going to be changing for those.
Focused LED, a good example is where you can see the Public Works Police Department, Sky Globe from miles away, that the focused LEDs point to light downward instead of whatever that
point is. I can see it over there. On the subdivision ordinance in Chapter 17.8 revision page.
Thank you,
Mr. 3D. Eliminated sketch plan form, the procedures for approval. Are we eliminating form, or are is that supposed to be from?
A typo, actually. Yeah, let me brought 17802. This also includes revisions to the zoning code regarding plan developments. So this was done to make both those consistent in any changes. Engineering, the sketch plan. Can you please give me the number again?
3B, eliminated the sketch plan. I'm assuming you meant from the procedures for approval, or is there a form that was in there?
I'm sure it was from. Yeah, I mean, the sketch plan is gone entirely, so there's no form associated with it.
So this is supposed to be from?
From, yes.
Gotcha. So we're deleting the whole thing, not the form?
Yes, we
just making the delineation?
Yes, ma'am.
And then my thanks to the planning commission and the staff. You did a good job on that.
to move it forward?
Yes.
Copy your lease.
This item, we're asking, we're seeking your approval to enter into a new agreement with the contract in Tulsa. Trying to prepare for the expiration of our current lease agreement that expires around mid-February. We started talking to representatives from Conica and Volta, Canon, and a company in Puerto Rico to see if we could get better pricing for copiers than see what's out there. And in the end, Rico was asking for an average of $895.33 per month for our copiers. Canon was asking for $1,035.48 on an average per month. The reason that I'm speaking in averages is because part of the agreement has a base price for the machines. The other part is a cost per copy, and that fluctuates month to month. But we have pretty solid numbers on the average of what we use per month. Now, our current agreement with Conica Minolta involves two machines, one that we own and one that we lease. And that agreement is currently $883.94 per month. If we enter into a new agreement with Conica Minolta now or any time when it expires, there's an advantage to doing it now. But if we do it in February, the new agreement would cost $705.04. And what would occur is Conica Minolta, the machine we're leasing, would give to the village at no charge. That would replace the second copier that the police department uses that is mostly used for patrol. And then we would get a newer machine where we have our better machine now. So the village then would own two copiers. And the one that would be replaced at the police department could go anywhere in the village and want that needs or want that. It's a colored copier as well. So if there are some advantages, but if there are advantages, now, we would, on average, just if we took that older copier out of the mix, we would say about $180 a month. If we kept that machine, we have to have a service agreement. And I can't tell you how much that would be, because it would depend on if we have an agreement on the machine it would replace. And also, it would act as a printer, probably, which you'd take money that we're spending on the printer cartridges and not people at all. So I don't know. I can't tell you what we would say based on that. But if we entered into the contract soon, we could potentially save between $500 and $700 by doing a new agreement now, because counting from the multiple tear off to the great agreement that we're under now and models that are in the minute.
How long will it be due?
3 years.
2 years?
3 years.
Yeah. You have any idea what that happy will go? How it works?
Yes.
Maybe.
I'm fishing for
them.
Wait, you see our color? You saw our color printer today? You see?
I
said everywhere.
That's why I spoke quick.
Didn't matter much, though, did it?
Now, we haven't spent a lot of time looking at that. get a term, so you had a couple copier printer props here too. Downstairs recently, so.
So that's something we need to look at, tie in the contract?
Well, yeah, I mean, we need to, but, you know, Chief is saying, regardless, we got to get it done soon, and we'll get it done soon, but I guess we're asking for approval to move forward with the agreement because we're still going to save the money.
I guess I'm going to look at a better agreement, but yeah, aside from one.
It's just a question where it goes, and if we need to add an additional one, then I think we'll bring it back. If Ron, you know, if we need another one, or if, you know, they need another one, which adds to the total, and if we do,
I don't know, it's not up to decide whether it's natural or not.
I might not need it.
One phone call.
Bubble load impact this price.
Well, sure, we'll make it higher.
You would make it higher because you're adding another pressure. No, we're not suggesting adding another pressure. We just have to figure out where the other one goes. But we don't truly believe, you know, that we still have a color printer downstairs. We can live with it. I don't know Public Works needs, but, and Ron and Mike have talked about it. So we always need to get our heads together and make sure that we get it the best spot, whatever that needs.
I think I was on his wavelength that if we need another printer and we go back to them and say, well, you know, this is a really great price, what can you do if we add one more in the mix? And of course that would come out of somebody else's budget, obviously, and be figured in. But it's always been the case, the more you buy, the better the deal. And I think what he's saying, could we get a better deal overall if we use now, since they seem to be so willing to be bargaining chips?
Yeah, we need to get our heads together to determine if that's correct. Your heads are right.
Thank you.
And we're going to do that very soon.
So the initial staff recommendation is that we do the new copier, buy out the old, and continued use of our currently village-owned unit. And their question is, should we then have another new copier for Village Hall on top of those three?
Yes. That's what I understood.
So we're trying to say the initial staff recommendation is that the three, wherever the third one goes, will suffice, or are we looking into another new one for Village Hall?
I think when the three go, will suffice. It's just because actually the one that's just the black and white second one they have is colored also. So it's a question of, you know, does Mike need a total additional one, the police department needs a total additional one, right, isn't it? Or, you know, does that go out? Because there's three, there'll be three colored machines now. Or, excuse me. Based on the recommendation, there'll be three colored machines. The police department currently has one.
Two.
Well, I know, but it's really only one. Because it doesn't, you don't use
it. We have a set, so we'll
print on color. So they're currently using one. Public Works doesn't have any. We have issues with our color stuff. But with the configuration that Mike's talking about, that's three color prints. So, but the chief's indicated a need for an additional one. Whether we really need color term, whether it's affordable or not, to add one to the program, we haven't looked at yet. But we just had the problems, as Mike was doing this work, we just had the problems with ours. This has been developed, so that's why there still is a question. But I think we're okay with the three. We just need to talk about it and make sure we're really okay with it.
So when this comes back to us next time, we'll have more clarification and we'll know if there's a better deal for more.
Yes.
Or stay where we are.
Correct.
We'll know which way is going to be most feasible and doable.
Cool.
I also think that timeline also works well with us and our deal.
To another board meeting, a regular board meeting, because then we find that having that for him.
I will check.
I think as well, because they really want to solve the problems. Well, I guess we're suggesting, though, that we can go forward with this as is. We'll evaluate if there's a need for it,
and
the addition. Then that would take more board review, but the way it currently stands, I think we're going to be okay if we utilize this. We just have to look at it and, you know, cross the T's and dot the I's. So we'd like to bring it next time with the configuration that the chief is talking about. And if we need the other one, we'll let you know. And we'll
what you're asking tonight, do we need a vote to go forward or just the consensus?
Consensus to go forward, yes, sir. Yeah, that's, I'm sorry.
And then once you get additional information, then we'll have the spending authority.
Yeah, that was the intention.
The consensus seems to be to go forward as planned. And solicitation ordinance revision.
Hey, you're on.
All right, then. There have been a number of changes since the last time that we've been pulled up, but a few minor changes to clarify some of the questions that were presented by board members the last time we got the ordinance up. One thing is that under the old ordinance, we saw the definition of solicitor has been changed. We are now reverting back to the regular definition that you had prior. This is to help clear up any confusion as to whether an individual going door to door for political, religious, or charitable purposes is required to obtain a license. They are not, as long as they're not soliciting funds. So if politician, you're going forward door to door to ask for signatures or to talk about issues, or if you're a religious individual who wants to put share your line with other people, per Supreme Court precedent, you are not required to obtain a license from the vote front. But we are continuing the prior ordinance that had laid that out. Additionally, we had made a number of changes to section 050, which was your previous section requiring individuals going door to door to solicit for political, religious, or charitable purposes to obtain a license. We have amended that section to also include individuals who want to solicit the right of way. To clear up any confusion between the different regulations on flood vote, we are now creating section 045, which applies strictly to individuals who are soliciting in the right of way. And 050 will continue to only apply to individuals who are soliciting door-to-door for political purposes and charitable purposes. And the very last change is that in section 5.40.060, subsection B, we have clarified the term food vendors. We have added this in there because food vendors, like ice cream trucks, do use the right way to get from point A to point B. So we have made a small clarification saying that, yes, they will be in the right way, but they must maintain their safety regulations of pulling to the side of the road, not in the middle of the intersection, to clarify the restrictions that are still taking place.
One thing that, one reason the board asked questions last time that we're bringing it back now to the committee whole, it was a question of limitation on the number of intersections, and we did that language wasn't clear. If you recall, we revised this some time ago to limit those numbers. We can no longer limit those numbers, except in the event of, what was it, Dean, there coming out of safety considerations?
Based on the statute, the only limitation that the village can apply are reasonable conditions in writing that are consistent with public safety concerns.
So we talked about it briefly, and we would need more guidance on if you would like us to go further and then make a recommendation on the conclusion. But for example, we briefly talked about the solicitations at right-of-way intersections with traffic signals being a greater hazard than the potential for hazards exist at signalized intersections versus stop signs for two reasons. One, you've got speeding traffic moving through the intersection, so somebody potentially in the right-of-way, and all the things associated with that hazard of somebody standing in moving traffic. Cars get stopped, you know, somebody thinks they have a green light, and they stop for the vendor, for example. Hazard, right turns, everything associated with signalized intersections. We thought that stops, intersections with stop signs were a little safer because everybody stopped. So to limit any soliciting at intersections would have to be done for safety considerations. If you board gives us some guidance, if you would like to develop that for lighted intersections, develop it in a little further detail and then make a recommendation for you.
So for example, with Fairfield Road, you would not allow the solicitation?
That's correct. If we found and you found that there were safety hazards there, if you made the finding that it was not as safe as it should be, if you don't want to preclude us from soliciting that intersection. Yes. And then if it was, it would involve all lighted intersections.
Not just that case-by-case basis?
Not in that general finding, no. If you wanted us to do a case-by-case evaluation, that might be a little tougher. But we just thought we could do that. It would take additional time. I think that generally, though, it was a general consideration for lighted intersections that we discussed. We don't get a lot of solicitations except for two intersections, one lighted and one stop sign. But, yeah, you got to see
the rate there. They do that 124 on Fairfield, they do solicitation there, and there haven't been problems there. So, like, Fairfield is not that busy as that, in a sense, and there's usually high traffic where they're stopped for a long period of time. So I don't see that as a patron of theirs at 124 as well.
Well, that's what, you know, we haven't developed anything fully there, but you could have a number of days with multiple solicitations, too. So.
What does the fire district do there? Do they do the fill the booth?
They do fill the booth. They did last year.
So they stop. They can't stop. They're like in 134.
So it is a stop time. I don't know if you know the history of this legislation, but the genesis of the legislation was somebody denied Firefighters Association the ability to do the fill booth in an intersection. This legislation came about. So the legislation is written very broadly to basically force municipalities to permit these kinds of solicitations. So if you could have some specific safety problems to point out, if you have to put any limitations in the ordinance, and you really can't do a case by case like Mark was saying.
Well, this is where if you want us to look at limiting it, we can. If you don't limit it,
well, I guess I'm asking in particular, you, Chief and Ron, do you feel that this is something that would be beneficial to look at further for safety issues, or are you okay with what we're doing next?
I'm okay with what we're doing now. We don't have any issues, but I'm okay with solicitation in broad sense in the public right of way. If it's organized and if there is some high visibility requirement for the solicitor to be noticed.
Chief, you ready to ask something?
Just Administrator Huber mentioned when they start crowding more and more intersections on Monday, people, the driver's patients start to wear them, and then they speed past them and things like that. And if it's in an uncontrolled intersection, it gets a little bit more hazardous, like a stop sign, because they're not being held by the light. We haven't had any issues.
That's what I said. We haven't had any issues, but they're supposed to be in that corner. So I would not understand that.
One thing I had noticed, I think it was the night in Columbus with their Tootsie Rolls, there was one gentleman who was holding it up above his head, and we had multiple drivers stop that thought he was directing traffic because of his motions of people were coming up, and all of a sudden...
But that's
his role.
No, it was
not
his
role. Well, it was also a cloudy, rainy day, and...
And it, yeah.
Did he have to stop and do that?
No, they did not. That was one thing that hasn't been prominent in their collectors, and many of them have their vests from the organization, which are not reflective, so having reflective.
They should reflect the
vest. And the other thing that's prominent in here that all participants must be at least 18 years of age. I know we've had multiple listeners who are underage. Those were the improvements.
So what sort of enforcement are we using right now for the solicitors?
They come in and register.
But I mean, once they've done that, do we have any enforcement that checks on them to see that if they are compliant? Should we?
If the officer sees something that they are it's obvious they approach them. But if someone usually on police cars in the area, everybody can tell them about some behavior.
Now that we've got a report, we're going to be looking a little bit more. Yeah, yes, we will. We've not received reports.
So if you look at us, he's not clear, he's on his list in the corner, then I'm going to go up there and make sure you don't
come in. Because I usually let them know. If I don't let them know, previous communications with the police, they do stop. I mean, they have to leave. But I think one time we had somebody and Sheriff had been 120 as a sub church group, and they didn't have a permit from anywhere. They were told. But as far as downtown, we've got a pretty good limit.
Are they callable at any point?
Fair, although I can't recall right now at what date we did it in advance, but it was being where it is.
Andre's just thinking it might take actually explore doing a tactical issue.
We did explore that. We did that. We did that already.
I would just like to bring this topic back up into our forum, and you know, maybe between all of us and some wonderful attorneys, I think we can find some new resources that have some ideas or some unfocus that we can start looking at as well.
The only thing I think I've heard of is the different options that home rule communities have that not home rule communities don't have.
On what, all topics? We're just talking about...
In relation to properties and taxes and bonds, are there any specific things related to...
Well, the private purpose test is a reason to... That applies to all the non-homeowners.
So I'd just like to put it out here and have everybody put their thinking caps on and look in some new directions and maybe touch back with some old friends and new friends and see if we can come up with some innovative and ingenious new ideas that we can explore. Instead of just sitting and listening to the I can't, I just think that's so defeated. So I'd like to see what we can do.
Trustee Sherman, are you talking about revenue generating?
Not necessarily. I mean, that would be terrific in bringing new revenue, but it's also on our own, you know, that we're paying these bonds, and we have no revenue for them. So how can we minimize, some of our costs on these properties, too? Look at all the different angles. How can we save money, spend less, do something with the property that might actually benefit the village without a huge cost to it and kind of offset with something. And I don't even know exactly what I'm looking for because I don't even know exactly what ideas and possibilities are out there. All I know is that we're all stuck with it. So I think we need to look at it as let's stop taking the we can't and keep looking for the how and the we can. Somehow, some way, I think there's an answer out there. I just don't know how we're going to find it unless we start pushing, asking, and keep an eye. And we have the annex building, and we have so many pieces of property. So it's just an avenue I'd like to explore because we haven't really. We've accepted the no.
I have one. I'd like to, and I think we've talked about this before, just understanding the answer, but I'd like to look into the possibility of kind of redesigning our website so that our information is more, user-friendly, so to speak. I mean, right now we post entire documents out there, but and I know PDFs are searchable, but I'd like to see it broken down into sections. And I've seen some municipal websites and some education websites that are where they can actually be used by board. They distribute their materials to that. So when we talk about going paperless, I mean, they have things where the trustee log in and have the board packet right there. I think there's some, from what I can tell, there's some companies that kind of specialize in that. So, let's take a look at that.
Are we sending that on our website now?
No. That's
why we have to do what you got to
take. It works. It's functional.
It's not as appealing and it's not as functional as you're looking for it to be.
I'm just investigated it.
Well, if you've got somebody names, you can shoot them out and make them contact for these prices.
All right.
Yes? I was just wondering, what's happening with the balance? Is there any more?
Yeah, I had an update for the last few weeks. They're not coming. I also spoke with them at the ICSC conference, and basically there's nothing wrong with the site. They believe it's a good site. They don't have any concerns with the village. It's primarily due to their internal considerations from those franchisees.
Are there?
What does that mean?
And of course, nobody understands political considerations inside an organization, and neither would I. If I were a bet man, that's what I'd be betting. I mean, there's a couple local franchisees that probably don't want it there. One on, what is it, help me out, Tim?
Trellins and Gansville.
And well, Paul was all on the joint. They're where you take with business.
Yeah, I don't think one on Rollins and Hank over there from that big one. I got a few calls from the National Survey.
Speaking of the ICSC, how else did things go?
It was interesting this year. There was a considerable amount of municipalities. And not a lot of retail with brokers, municipalities, and government organizations trying to make deals. And so, you know, now we're competing against Schaumburg, who was there. And for them to have issues and show up, I mean, Green, DuPage County now, representation there. So, you know, we've got a battling with all the few one things. You know, it was well attended though. There was a lot of interest. You know, we talked to people, the audience was one, but we came out a little short of the state there, unfortunately. So
do you think we need to change our approaches and how we are getting
this? You know, that's a hugely loaded question. You know, it would cost money to, you know, attract some of those businesses. The bottom line, though, is you would have to increase your residential in the southwest part of the village. We've had Jewel tell us that on numerous occasions. Even McDonald's said a little of daytime traffic in that mall there. You know, that was one weakness they did say about the spot that would preclude them from moving there. Problem is we don't have that traffic either. I mean, our traffic counts, one huge benefit would be 120, 125 cash, get 53 done. That would triple the traffic count at that intersection and make it more viable for commercial. But our downtown numbers are limited to under 10,000. You know, we're competing against 30,000 on Rollins Road. You know, and we just have that little residential hole on the southwest side of town that, you know, when we compete against, you know, our neighbors on Rollins, they don't have that hole there. And they have the traffic that, you know, helps. You know, you can provide incentives, and one thing would help would be to provide an incentive off the bat, but I don't recommend that because it's too subjective and it's, they should be done on a case-by-case basis. You can some incentives, but we don't have the characteristics for those types of incentives at this point. It's just not enough payback on the tower. Property tax rebates and everything. You know, we don't have people asking, too. And, you know, we're fortunate that we do have a low sales tax rate, but as you can see, that doesn't play in the county. You know, that's one way we could raise revenue by doing a referendum to increase your property tax. Excuse me, sales tax. Because you currently don't have anything to do that. We'd have to have the voters' approval to do that. But that's a blind tax, and retailers don't see any benefit to us having a lower one because people are shopping everywhere else anyway. They don't go some part of the lower retail sales tax. So we're kind of hurting ourselves in that regard from a revenue perspective, but it doesn't help us from a sales tax or from a business economic development perspective. At the same time, you know, you can't define incentive documents, not knowing what people need. You can't make an incentive for an area. People do it though, they do TIFs, but the TIFs for an existing area. You want them downtown to redevelop, you want somebody to come in to do a facade. But that's going to cost money. That's going to cost us money to do that. We don't have a lot of people that come ask for that, and I don't think there's a market for it at this time. We just don't have enough traffic. We've got the industry out there. We don't have railhead that keeps the numbers down. We don't have easy access to the interstate system, which is also big. Well, we will if we get 120 and that bypass done. But we're still far, you heard it, we're too far from those access points for the pandemic.
So secondary to that, should we be approaching the ICSC conferences and conferences similar to that in Timberland?
No,
just keeping the minimal and...
At this time, okay. I don't see the need to go. I mean, you can argue that, you know, some people have the position that our name is still out there, but I believe we accomplish that through participation with Lake County Partners. And significant and reduced cost. Zero.
Could be good to keep an open mind about it in the future.
Well, you know, it will change so easily. With the election coming up, the presidency, things are bound to change quickly.
Good, anything.
Anything else? Motion to adjourn?
Don't
move. Second. Motion by Sandler, second by Newby, all in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries. Introduction before everybody.